What's up? This is Movies on Up. The only one who can stop a serial killer is the man who inspired him. I'm Dave, joined by the inspiration to my inner serial killer.
You're the meaning in my life. You are the inspiration.
That's Ryan. I am Dave. Happy Halloween! It is our Halloween extravaganza, our special Halloween episode. It's been a long month. I feel like we've done like 8 episodes, so we hope you hung with us through October. It's a big deal to us. I mean, we're lazy dudes, and 4 years in, we're still doing 2 episodes a week all through October, so that should kind of say how important Halloween is to us. So we did 31 movies to watch. We did a couple Peter Jackson movies, a couple vampire movies, Saw a few days ago. And this time we're doing
our Nightbreed.
Nightbreed kicked it off with Nightbreed. Last year we did something a little different where we each read something from Scary Tales to Tell in the Dark. And it was kind of cool. So this week we're doing the same thing for our Halloween special. We're not reading Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. We have a couple stories we're just going to read. And you can close your eyes and be transported to a different place and add in your own sound effects.
Because the budget for those is pretty much gone for this year.
Yeah.
And I mean the time budget.
Yeah, we went through that already. But they're not really sound heavy. I know last year we tried to pick stories that had sounds in them so Ryan could go re-add them. But this week, a little different. We're not doing... Ryan's not reading a classic story.
It's not classic yet.
Yeah, it's not going to be.
It's a nouveau classic.
But I'm going to be doing an Edgar Allan Poe story, my favorite Edgar Allan Poe story here at the end. Ryan is going to read something of mine.
A bestseller?
Yeah.
My favorite, I guess.
I have that website. It's called createdweekly.com. Every week for 20... What year is this? 16? 15?
2016.
Every week I've put up a new short story. They generally go up Friday morning. So at this point, we're 43 weeks in, I think. And Ryan's reading one of them. It went up a week or two ago. So it is on the site if you want to read how bad it is again after hearing it.
If you want to read any other ones. I think that was sort of... Dave, this is not like a self-promotional thing for him. He'll mention the site, but he's not the kind of guy that's really going to say, hey, read my stuff. But because I knew he was doing a story every week and we needed to read a story or wanted to, I thought it would make some sense to read one of Dave's. And if you want to read more, certainly you can go to createdweekly.com and do that.
Yeah, I tried to do horror-ish stuff for October. I wrote one about clowns because it was topical. And
yeah, because we have one running for president.
2 of them.
Hey-o!
Ba-doo! Well, 4 if you count the other ones.
Yes.
But we'll do that first. Ryan will read my story. It just went up. It went up the 21st. I have no idea what day it is right now.
That's
so
probably last week, some 2 weeks ago. I don't know.
So we'll do that. It is called Adultergeist. We're flipping through the channels one night. Or it might have been Netflix or flipping through channels. And my girlfriend got all excited because she likes the softcore porn on Cinemax and stuff.
She's getting outed.
She likes like the stupid, like not for the boobs, but just for the stupidity of them. And she thought one of them was called Adultergeist and got all excited. And I thought, man, Adultergeist is a really good title. So I wrote a story that the title spoils the story, but whatever. So it's called Adultergeist. Ryan will read that.
Fallon sat up quickly from the middle of a deep sleep. It was happening again. There were banging sounds, like somebody slamming against the wall, coming from the library of the house they purchased 3 months ago. The library was just below their bedroom, so the noises were very loud and easy to isolate where they were coming from. She looked next to her to wake up her husband, Todd, who hadn't believed her that the noises had been happening a few times a week for the past few months. He was never there when the noises were taking place. He was always either working late or had fallen asleep on the couch downstairs or went to the kitchen for a midnight snack. It was always something. He always had an excuse for why he didn't hear the noises. Fallon wasn't sure if he'd heard them and just didn't want to admit it or if she was going insane. Moans started to join the thumping sounds as they often did. Long, loud moans. Moans clearly from a female. Mostly indistinguishable noises, but occasionally you could try to make out a word if you really convinced yourself. Fallon had tricked herself into being fairly certain that she had heard the terms don't, naughty boy, stop, not necessarily in that order, and a few others she couldn't quite make out. This was happening every few nights. It would go on for 20 minutes or so, then stop. And in that 20 minutes, Fallon could never find the courage to go into the library to investigate. Instead, she'd sit there terrified the entire time, then lie awake the rest of the night in fear, then spend the entire next day worrying about the sounds coming back. The noises were consuming her life. During the day, she would research the past history of the house, looking for anything that could help explain why these noises are haunting her. The house was built a little over 80 years ago. It was designed by the architect Alfred Millard, who secretly had it built for his wife Mabel as a 10th anniversary gift. They raised 5 children in the house: Alvin, Albert, Evelyn, Gerald, and Geraldine. The kids all grew up and moved out, and eventually Mabel passed away in her sleep while visiting their oldest, Albert, on the East Coast. This prompted Evelyn to move back to town to help with her father. The house is much too big for just one person. A few years after that, Alfred's health began deteriorating beyond a point where Evelyn could be of assistance, so her brothers and sisters decided on a home and moved Alfred into assisted living. They then sold the house and split the money among themselves. The Millards spent 47 years in the house that was built for them. The Millard children sold the house to the Wanding brothers, two local entrepreneurs that owned a handful of businesses throughout town. They were both single party boys who used this house as a bachelor pad for 12 years. Perhaps one of their parties had gotten out of hand one night and something happened here that no one had ever found out about. After the oldest Wanding brother had found love and settled down with a wife of his own, they sold the house to Charles Lundberg, a big city banker who had just retired and was looking for more of a small town to wind down his life in. He got bored after 2 years and wanted to move back to the city. Charles Lundberg sold the house to Chelsea Denton, whose husband had recently passed away and wanted her two boys to graduate from the high school she did so many years ago. She lived there with her sons for 7 years. The boys moved out and went off to college, and Chelsea moved into an apartment just outside of town and started renting out the house. There was a family of 4 that she had rented to for 2 years. Then a single woman in her late 20s rented it off her for a little more than 3 years before passing away quietly in her bathtub one evening. After that, Chelsea didn't try renting out the house anymore and stopped taking care of it altogether. She eventually passed a few years after that, leaving the house to the boys. They did nothing with it until a few years ago when they sold it to a young couple who were looking to get into the house flipping business. That couple is who Fallon and Todd had bought the house from. So somebody did die in this house, but it was peaceful. Could it be the single woman that passed away in the bathtub? Her name was Stacy Devereaux. When looking her up, Fallon couldn't find much information. She was a teller at a bank in town, didn't seem to have many friends or many interests, and didn't seem to do much of anything. She could only find 2 pictures of her in her research. But Fallon thought she was very beautiful. She had wavy brown hair, with light green eyes, and the sweetest, most innocent smile she'd ever seen. Clearly, somebody this boring couldn't be the one haunting her. Actually, in a house with this boring of a history, why would anyone bother haunting it? These thoughts all ran through Fallon's mind every time the noises kept her awake. And that was still happening. The thumping and the moaning was still going on. Fallon had finally had enough. She knew within the next 5 minutes or so, these noises would be gone, and the whole process would repeat itself in a few nights. She had to find the courage. She had to be brave. Now was the time to go to the library. Fallon took a deep breath and stepped out of bed quietly. She slipped her slippers on and grabbed the flashlight she always kept on the table beside her bed. She walked slowly down the stairs, trying not to make a noise. She didn't know if ghosts could be caught by surprise, but if they could, she wanted to try. Or was it even a ghost? Was Fallon going absolutely crazy? Every scenario was running through her head as she walked down those steps. Now there she was, right in front of the library door, the thumping and moaning even louder. Fallon took another deep breath, terrified of what she might see. She reached for the doorknob, turned it, and shoved open the door. Fallon screamed a scream louder than any of the moans, a higher-pitched shriek than anyone knew was humanly possible. Her hand loosened, and the flashlight she was holding slammed to the floor. Inside the library, she saw a horror worse than anything she had ever imagined. Against the wall, there stood her husband, Todd, with his pants around his ankles, having sex with the ghost of Stacy Devereaux. "What the fuck, Todd?" she screamed out when she could finally get past the horrific sight enough to form words.
"Fallon, sweetie," Todd said clumsily as he tried to pull his pants up in a hurry. "It's not what it looks like."
"It looks like my husband is having sex with the ghost of Stacy Devereaux, the lonely woman who used to live here and died almost 10 years ago." Todd looked surprised and turned to Stacy.
"You didn't tell me you used to live here."
She bit her bottom lip and shrugged, looking even more innocent and adorable than she did in the two photos Fallon had seen of her. Fallon's fear was now gone. Her curiosity had been resolved. All of that now turned to anger. Anger at her husband, obviously, because he was cheating on her with a ghost. And anger at Stacy Devereaux, a woman she had only known through research and two photos, but in some odd way had grown to admire and develop sort of a crush on. As pissed off as she was at her husband, Todd, she couldn't help but admit to herself that she was even more jealous than angry. "But why?" Fallon asked, staring at the ghost of Stacy Devereaux in her beautiful light green eyes, made even more breathtaking by the paranormal illumination behind them. "You seem so sweet and innocent." "What can I say?" Stacy Devereaux answered with a shrug of her shoulders. "Ghouls just want to have fun." And scene.
That's it. That is it. That is Adultergeist by me. So yeah, that was
That was the classic?
Yeah, you can find more of that at createdweekly.com. They're not all that stupid. Occasionally I'll throw in a light one, and that was it. Mine, not as light, does not have as stupid of an ending.
There's no Cyndi Lauper reference?
No, I wish. I would like a lot more Poe if there were. Mine is a short story by Edgar Allan Poe. Probably my sophomore or junior year, one of my English classes, we had to read The Cask of Amontillado, and it terrified me. You know those things you lay on, like a mattress? They're like styrofoam, like mountains. And like if you have a sofa bed, you lay it on there to make it a little softer. We used to keep one of those behind the couch, and there was...
Yes, I know one of those. I felt like that needed to be said.
Yeah,
yes.
There was enough room between, because we had a pull-out sofa bed that when my aunt would come and stay with us, she would sleep on there. So we would roll this up and keep it behind the couch. And there was just like a foot behind the couch, enough to roll that up and put it there. Well, when my brother was watching me and he would have friends over, they thought it was the funniest thing in the world to roll me up in that and then throw me behind the couch to where I cannot move. And that styrofoam, it's just stuffy, and I hate the smell and the feel of styrofoam. And it was the most terrifying thing ever because I'm just trapped. I can't move. They could have left me there for as long as they wanted. I had no way out of it.
So you and Poe both were terrified of being sort of buried alive.
Yes.
Claustrophobic.
So spoiler alert, that's what terrifies me of The Cask of Amontillado. I have not read it in years, but it has left this kind of impact on me. So without further ado, The Cask of Amontillado by Edgar Allan Poe. Fortunato had hurt me 1,000 times, and I had suffered quietly. But then I learned that he had laughed at my proud name, Montresor, the name of an old and honored family. I promised myself that I would make him pay for this, that I would have revenge. You must not suppose, however, that I spoke of this to anyone. I would make him pay, yes, but I would act only with the greatest care. I must not suffer as a result of taking my revenge. A wrong is not made right in that manner. And also, the wrong would not be made right unless Fortunato knew that he was paying and knew who was forcing him to pay. I gave Fortunato no cause to doubt me. I continued to smile in his face, and he did not understand that I was now smiling at the thought of what I had planned for him, at the thought of my revenge. Fortunato was a strong man, a man to be feared, but he had one great weakness. He liked to drink good wine, and indeed he drank much of it. So he knew a lot about fine wines, and proudly believed that he was a trained judge of them. I, too, knew old wines well, and I bought the best I could find. And wine, I thought, wine would give me my revenge. It was almost dark one evening in the spring when I met Fortunato in the street, alone. He spoke to me more warmly than was usual, for already he had drunk more wine than was good for him. I acted pleased to see him, and I shook his hand, as if he had been my closest friend. Fortunato, how are you?
Montresor, good evening, my friend.
My dear Fortunato, I am indeed glad that I have met you. I was just thinking of you, for I have been tasting my new wine. I have bought a full cask of a wine which they tell me is Amontillado, but...
Amontillado?
Quite impossible! I know, it does not seem possible. As I could not find you, I was just going to talk to Lucrezi. If anyone understands wines, it's Lucrezi. He will tell me.
Lucrezi? He does not know one wine from another.
But they say he knows as much about wines as you know.
Oh, come, let us go.
Go where?
To your vaults to taste the wine.
He went from French to German, I think, there.
They're the same, aren't they?
No, my friend, no. I can see that you are not well, and the vaults are cold and wet.
I do not care. Let us go. I'm well enough. The cold is nothing. Amontillado. Someone is playing games with you. And Lucrezi. Ha! Lucrezi knows nothing about wines. Nothing at all.
As he spoke, Fortunato took my arm, and I allowed him to hurry me to my great stone palace, where my family, the Montresors, had lived for centuries. There was no one at home. I had told the servants that they must not leave the palace, as I would not return until the following morning, and they must care for the place. This, I knew, was enough to make it certain that they would all leave as soon as my back was turned. I took down from their places on the wall two brightly burning lights. I gave one of these to Fortunato and led him to a wide doorway. There we could see the stone steps going down into the darkness. Asking him to be careful as he followed, I went down before him, down under the ground, deep under the old walls of my palace. We came finally to the bottom of the steps and stood there a moment together. The earth which formed the floor was cold and hard. We were entering the last resting place of the dead of the Montresor family. Here, too, we kept our finest wines, here in the cool, dark, still air under the ground. Fortunato's step was not sure, because of the wine he had been drinking. He looked uncertainly around him, trying to see through the thick darkness which pushed around us. Here, our brightly burning light seemed weak indeed, but our eyes soon became used to the darkness. We could see the bones of the dead lying in large piles along the wall. The stones of the walls were wet and cold. From the long rows of bottles which were lying on the floor, among the bones, I chose one which contained a very good wine. Since I did not have anything to open the bottle with, I struck stone wall with it and broke off the small end. I offered the bottle to Fortunato. Here, Fortunato, drink some of this fine Medoc. It will help to keep us warm. Drink!
Thank you, my friend. I drink to the dead who lay sleeping around us.
And I, Fortunato, drink to your long life.
Ah, a very fine wine indeed. But the Amontillado!
It is farther on. Come. We walked on for some time. We were now under the river's bed, and water fell in drops upon us from above. Deeper into the ground we went, past still more bones.
Your vaults are many and large. There seems to be no end to them.
We are a great family, and an old one. It is not far now, but I can see you are trembling with the cold. Come, let us go back before it is too late.
It is nothing. Let us go on. But first, another drink of your Medoc.
I took up from among the bones another bottle. It was another wine of a fine quality, a De Grave. Again, I broke off the neck of the bottle. Fortunato took it and drank it all without stopping for a breath. He laughed and threw the empty bottle over his shoulder. We went on deeper and deeper into the earth. Finally, we arrived at a vault in which the air was so old and heavy that our lights almost died. Against three of the walls, there were piles of bones higher than our heads. From the fourth wall, someone had pulled down all the bones, and they were all spread around us on the ground. In the middle of the wall was an opening into another vault. If I can call it that, a little room about 3 feet wide, 6 or 7 feet high, and perhaps 4 feet deep. It was hardly more than a hole in the wall. "Go on," I said. "Go in. The Amontillado is in there." Fortunato continued to go forward, uncertainly. I followed him immediately. Soon, of course, he reached the back wall. He stood there for a moment, facing the wall, surprised and wondering. In that wall were two heavy iron rings. A short chain was hanging from one of these and a lock from the other. Before Fortunato could guess what was happening, I closed the lock and chained him tightly to the wall. I stepped back. "Fortunato," I said, "put your hand against the wall. You must feel how the water runs over it. Once more, I ask you, please, will you not go back? No? If not, then I must leave you. But first, I must do everything I can for you." But the Amontillado! Ah, yes, indeed, the Amontillado. As I spoke these words, I began to search among the bones, throwing them to one side. I found the stones which earlier I had taken down from the wall. Quickly, I began to build the wall again, covering the hole where Fortunato stood trembling. "Montresor, what are you doing?" I continued working. I could hear him pulling at the chain, shaking it wildly. Only a few stones remained to put in their place. "Montresor, ha ha, this is a very good joke indeed. Many times will we laugh about it, ha ha, as we drink our wine together, ha ha." Of course, as we drink the Amontillado. "But it is not late. Should we not be going back? They will be expecting us. Let us go." "Yes, let us go." As I said this, I lifted the last stone from the ground. "Montresor, for the love of God." "Yes, for the love of God." I heard no answer. "Fortunato," I cried. "Fortunato." I heard only a soft, low sound and a half cry of fear. My heart grew sick. It must have been the cold. I hurried to force the last stone into its position, and I put the old bones against the pile against the wall. For half a century now, no human hand has touched them. May he rest in peace. That's pretty brutal.
It is, because he promised the dude this wine and then, like, didn't even give him wine. Like, you could have, like...
He gave him good wine on the way there.
Well,
but
yeah, but...
Not that.
Right, but this, you know, at that point, he could have just given him any kind of wine that he had not already had and said, "Well, here it is. Like, I'm going to kill you, but here is the wine that was promised." It's
he
a real...
left him with the bottle.
It's a real cock tease.
Yeah, he could have left him with the bottle in there.
Right, exactly.
And at least let that be the last thing he drinks.
Yeah. Instead of just, like, I don't know, drink this sewer water that's gonna,
yeah,
that's kind of a mean thing to do.
Yeah, don't do that,
and don't fuck a ghost.
Don't
if you're
how
married,
people are mean to you,
or in a relationship. Like, if you're single, I guess you can fuck a ghost. I mean,
yeah, ghost comes up with a BJ, like Stance,
right?
Like Ray Stance, go for it.
He was not married or attached,
no.
That was totally cool.
But anyway, that's our little different of a Halloween special through the season. Did you watch any good Halloween movies that maybe didn't get mentioned during our 31 for 31 or we didn't do episodes on?
I'm gonna say no, although when you had brought up the cast of Amontillado, there's an animated collection on Netflix of Edgar Allan Poe stuff that was pretty cool. I can't exactly remember the name. There's like little vignettes to try and connect each story, and it's Death talking to this
raven. I've seen it on there. I just haven't watched it.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. I mean, all the stories are sort of animated very similarly, so it's kind of, the stories are all Edgar Allan Poe's, and the animation is all kind of the same. So it's a lot of the same, but it's pretty neat and apropos to
Edgar
the story.
Allan Poe. Yeah,
yes.
To Hell and Back is also on Netflix, I believe. That's an animated movie from a few years back. Great voice cast, but it just kind of seemed to go under the radar. That looked like the same kind of animation. I haven't watched it yet, but as of the release of this, it should be up on Netflix now. I Am the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House, a new horror movie directly to Netflix, starring Ruth Wilson, who is amazing. So her starring in a horror movie, I am 100% on board for. Other than that, we didn't mention The Final Girls on our 31 for 31.
We talk about that last year?
That was my favorite movie of last year, I think. So it's been brought up, but it hasn't been brought up this October. So yeah, a lot of good horror movies. And we'll be back next. We'll be back next week with our favorite doctors to honor Doctor Strange coming out.
We're done with
horror, so we move right into Marvel, because that's pretty much how our calendar is separated.
So next year we'll be back with more horror. I want to do Final Destination 2. But by the time we plan next October, we will completely forget that I said that.
And there may be another Final Destination movie by then. Yeah. That's how that seems to work.
Thank you for hanging with us for Halloween all of October. It's awesome to us, and we appreciate it, Ryan Burke, that suggests a few episodes. Yeah. Thanks for planning for us, because we don't like to.
Why don't you get to work on next year?
But until next week.
Keep it up.